Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is October the 17th. We are in Hosea, Perek Beis, Chapter 2. So last time we learned how Hosea was told to marry a woman who was not necessarily faithful, couldn't trust her necessarily. He had children from her, which he could not be 100% sure were his own children. And then Hashem told him to send her away, and he said, I can't do that because I have children from her. So Hashem said to him, then how could you tell me to send away the Jewish people? They come from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So because of that, now Hosea is going to completely turn around, and he's going to daven for the Bnei Yisrael. So we read the first pasuk of Perek Beis before, but we're going to read it again. And the numbers of the Jewish people will be like the sand of the sea, asher lo yimad v'lo yisafer, which cannot be measured nor can be counted. And will be in place of saying to them that you are not my nation, will be said about them that they are the sons of the living God. So the Hosea here is davening that the Jewish people should be considered by Hashem as Hashem's people. The Gemara says that this is one of the sources that you know about, that one is not supposed to count the Jewish people directly. Because it says, Asher lo yimad v'lo yisafer, that will not be measured and not be counted. So one is not supposed to count the Jewish people directly. So one should count that what they did when they needed to count people, the kings, then they would, each person would give an item, and they would count the item of that thing. So we know that in the Chumash, they would give the machatzis a shekel, the half shekel, and then Moshe Rabbeinu counted them. Shaul HaMelech counts them as well. He has them each take a sheep from the flock of the king, and then put each person takes a sheep and then puts the sheep into a specific place, and then they count the sheep and they know how many Jews there are. In the Beis HaMikdash, when the Kohanim needed to make a lottery to decide who would be the Kohen who would do a particular job, so they call it the pious meaning the lottery. The way that would work is the Kohanim would stand in a circle, and whoever was in charge would take the hat, the mikbas, the hat off of a particular Kohen. So that would be the Kohen they would start from, and then he would give a number. He would say a large number, a high number, much higher than all the Kohanim who were there. They would start from this person, they would count around, and then whoever the number came out on, that would be the person who would get the job. So you can't count the people, so they would put out a finger, and you would count the fingers. So counting the people's fingers was acceptable. That's different than counting the people. So that would be okay to do. That's another way of counting the Jewish people. But that's not the main point of this pasuk. The main point of here, of course, is to say there'll be so many Jews that they will not be able to be counted nor measured. Pasuk Beis, verse 2, V'nikbitzu b'nei Yehuda u'b'nei Yisrael yachdav, and the b'nei Yehuda and the b'nei Yisrael will gather together, Yehuda being specified because of the fact that the southern kingdom, v'samu lahem rosh echad, and they will place upon themselves one head, one person in charge, v'olu min ha'aretz, and they will come up from the land, ki gadol yom Yisrael, for the day of Yisrael is great. This is referring to the kibbutz galios, the ingathering of the exiles, even though at this time the Jews were not in exile. But that should they, when they go to exile, they will gather together and they will come back to Eretz Yisrael. And it's called Yom Yisrael. Now Yisrael was the name of the first son that Hosea had with this woman. He had a son Yisrael, then he had a daughter Lo Ruchama, and then a son Lo Ami. So Yisrael means to be scattered around. So it's great, the day of Yisrael. In this case, in this context, it means the gathering of those who had been scattered around. So the name Yisrael is being used now in a positive context, the gathering of those who have been scattered. And in a similar vein, the next pasuk, Imu la'achechem ami, say to your brothers, my nation, rather than lo ami, not my nation, now they'll be called my nation. V'achoseichem ruchama, and to your sisters, you'll call them ruchama, pity or mercy, as opposed to lo ruchama, no pity or no mercy, which is what was used last time. So we're, all three names are now being used in the positive that that it turns around everything that had been said before, that if the Jewish people should go into exile, Hashem should look at the Jewish people as his people, as his nation, and he should take them back. Now, that is Hosea changing his response to Hashem and asking that Hashem take the Jewish people back. But we're not done yet with the entire description of Gullus. Once we've gotten into this description of what Gullus exile looks like and what its purpose is, the rest of this parak, the rest of this chapter, will be involved with Gullus, with exile, and also we're going to deal with another analogy which will be used as well. So we're going to go through this and we'll see how it works. I neglected to mention that this perek, perek Beis, most of the perek, almost till the end, is the haftorah for Parshas Bamidbar. Parshas Bamidbar, when we lay it in Shul, which is right before Shavuos time, this is the haftorah for Parshas Bamidbar. The Pasuk Dalet verse 4, Rivu v'imchem rivu, fight with your mother, fight. Ki hilo ishti, for she is not my wife. I am not her husband. Now, remember that the mother of these three children is the woman who was a prostitute, who Hosea had married. And in the mashal, in the analogy, so Klal Yisrael is being told to fight with their mother, meaning, in, as Rashi says over here, your mother is your b'knesia shalachem, in your gathering, which means the general rank and file of the Jewish people who are not behaving properly, you who are behaving properly should argue with those who are not behaving properly, because the ones who are not behaving properly, the general the behavior of the Jewish people, they are behaving in a way that she is not my wife, and I am not her husband, says Hashem. She should remove her promiscuity from upon her face. And those who bring promiscuous with her, she should remove from herself. Meaning that, again, as we learned before, the Jewish people are considered to be married to Hashem. And when, God forbid, the Jews go to some other worship and some other some other focus, then it is analogous to a woman who commits adultery. This analogy is used by Moshe Rabbeinu as well in the Chumash. He says, "Vizana elohim acherim." They'll go to other gods. In lashon znus, a lashon of adultery. So here as well, the general behavior of the Jewish people was not appropriate. So even though Hosea now is telling Hashem to take the Jewish people back, but the fact of the matter is, the reason why Hosea originally said that Hashem should get rid of the Jewish people and find someone else, as we learned last week, that was because the Jews were not, and in this point in time, are not behaving properly. So therefore, the Nevuah is continuing here with the same analogy, that even though Hosea is now davening for them, but in order for us to return to Hashem, there has to be a change in behavior. And those, since generally speaking, the Jews were not behaving properly, so therefore the analogy is that it's a woman who is committing adultery, and Hashem is saying, if that's the way you're going to behave, then you're not my wife and I'm not your husband. Until you remove that promiscuity and those who are being promiscuous with you, until you get rid of that, then we cannot have a relationship. As the pasuk continues, pasuk hey, verse 5. So Hashem says, "Penafshitena aruma, lest I remove her clothing so that she has nothing, and not just clothing, but she has no possessions. She's absolutely bereft of any possessions. V'itzaktia kiyomi v'aldan, I'll make her like the day she was born. We learned in Sefer Yechezkel, about 11 years ago, we learned that Yechezkel there has a nevuah, it's a mashal, that the Jews in Mitzrayim, when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, we were like a newborn baby, a newborn girl, lying in dirt, in blood, after having been born, and not having been cared for at all, as if a baby girl is born and left on the ground with no care whatsoever. Even the pasuk there goes through all of the details, even not even having had the umbilical cord cut properly, just lying there, and obviously that little girl is going to die, that infant is going to die, and Hashem comes, a man comes and discovers this forsaken infant and cares for the infant and cleans the infant and feeds the infant and raises that infant up to adulthood. So Hashem is the one, we are that infant in Mitzrayim, and Hashem comes and he saves us from that. So here Hashem is saying, if you're going to behave improperly, we'll go back to the way it was then. And you'll end up, God forbid, in this the way you were born, which means with nothing. V'samtia chamid bar, I will place her like the wilderness, meaning that with all of the decree that was made in the wilderness that the Jews would not be able to go into Israel, the same type of decree. V'shatiha keretz tzia, and I will leave her or place her like a desolate land. V'hamitia v'atzama, and I will let her die in thirst. So if this woman that we represent is not going to return to Hashem, so Hashem says, lest all this happen, that I'm going to have to carry all this out and place you in very, very dire circumstances. And not only that, v'espaneha lo arachem, I would not have mercy on her children, ki b'nei zinunim heim, because they are children of adultery. When a woman is not behaving faithfully, then you can't trust that the children are from her husband. They may be from somebody else, as we learned before. So if that's the case, then Hashem says, I cannot have mercy on her children either, because we don't know where they came from. which would mean that the children, what is the children analogous to in this, if the woman is the Jewish people? So Hashem says, I can't have mercy on her children either, because I don't know where the children came from. Who are the children? So the children are either going to be representing those who are behaving properly, but they are a small minority of the Jewish people. Hashem says that if the body of the Jewish people is not behaving properly, I cannot have mercy on those few who do, because they're part of a larger whole. And just as I cannot trust anything that comes from this woman, I cannot trust anything that comes from the Jewish people. Or the banim, the children, would be those few good deeds that are done by the people who are not behaving properly, that they are suspect, those good deeds, because it's coming from people who generally are rejecting Hashem. So that they do one or two nice things does not change the way that they are going to be treated. Pasuk Zion, verse 7, Kizan sa'imam, for their mother has committed adultery. Hovisha horasam, she has, well, there are two ways to read this. I was going to tell you the non-literal meaning. What do you have as a direct translation of those words?
She who conceived them.
What's hovisha? What do they have for that?
Ashamed herself.
Ashamed, she who has conceived them. So the hovisha from a shaming, and then horasam, those she who conceived them. She, the mother, has been shameful, the one who conceived them. Chazal say over here, hovisha horasam, to be hora or to be more also means to teach or to rule. And those who were charged with the job of ruling for the Jewish people and directing the Jewish people, that would be the Nevi'im and the Chachamim. Hovisha, she has shamed them. She's not interested in hearing from them. They're telling her how to behave and she is rejecting them. Ki amra, for she has said, Elcha acharei me'ahavaya, I will go after those who have loved me. Nos ne'lach mi umeimai, those who have given my bread and my water. Samri ufishti, my wool and my linen. Shamni b'shikuyai, my oil and the other things I need to survive. All of my sustenance. So this woman, again in this analogy, is saying, I get a lot of things from those people with whom I am committing adultery, with whom I am acting promiscuously with. And they give me things. They give me bread and water and wool and linen and oil, etc. So I want to go to them because they will take care of me, she says, rather than her husband. So again, the Jewish people have rejected Hashem and because they think there's the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. They can go someplace else and get better things. So Hashem says, if that's the way they're going to behave, Lachain, therefore, Hinan Isach Estarkech Basirim, I'm going to enclose your roads with thorns, with a thicket. Vigadartias Gedeira, and I will close up her walls. Unesivosa lo simtsa, and her paths she will not find. A woman who is behaving unfaithfully, she is apparently sneaking away from the house. So Hashem says in the analogy, I will lock her in. I won't let her go anywhere. I'll close up all of those paths and those breaks in the fence that she is using to get out. I'm going to lock all of that up. And what's going to happen? V'ridefais me'ahavel, she will chase after those who loved her. V'lo sasigo sam, she will not be able to reach them. U'vikshasam, she will seek them. V'lo simsa, she won't find. So she will end up with nothing because she's going to want to go after these people, but she won't be able to reach them. So then she'll have absolutely nothing. V'amran, she'll say, El chavi ashuva al ishi harishna, I will go and return to my first husband. Ki tov li az me'ata, because it was better for me then than now. So I'd rather go back to my first husband, to Hashem. So by making the Jewish people unable to access those other sources that they thought they would get things from, so Hashem forces the Jewish people to come back to him. This is referring to the Jews in Galus, because when the Jews were in Israel and they thought that they could do better with Avodah Zarah, with foreign worship, which means a relationship with foreign people as well, as they behave, to behave as the non-Jews around us. So in doing that, the Hashem says, then I'll put them in Galus. They will not be treated properly by those people around them. They will seek to worship other gods. They will seek to get sustenance, bread, water, etc. from the non-Jews that they will now be living among. But those non-Jews will reject the Jewish people. That will be, in effect, cutting them off from their promiscuity, because they won't be able to get anything from going to other gods and other worship, because the non-Jews around them are going to reject them. And that will be like closing off the fence, closing off the paths. So then the Jews will say, this woman will say, I'd rather return to my first husband because it was better for me then than now. V'hi lo yad'a, she did not know, which means she didn't think about. Ki anochi nasati lo hadagon v'atirosh v'yitzar, I'm the one who gave her the grain, the wine, and the oil. The chesef here, beisila, and I gave her a lot of silver, vizav and gold, asula baal. They used it for idol worship. That's what they used it for. The Gemara in Meseches Brachos cites this pasuk in regard to the egel hazav, the golden calf, that we were given so much gold and then we used it for avodah zara. Lachen ashuv, therefore I will return. V'lokachti digani v'ito, I will take away my grain in its time as it ripens. I will take it away from her. V'siroshi b'moado, and my wine in its time. V'itzaltid samriu fishtin, I will separate my wool and my linen from her. L'chasav says eravasa, which she would have used to cover her nakedness. I'm going to take that away and she won't have anything. She won't have these things. Now, even though in the previous pasuk, the previous two pasuk, in pasuk tes, in verse 9, it says that that she will say, I'll go back to my first husband because it was better for me then than now. So why are the bad things still happening? Isn't that a repudiation of the way she behaved? Isn't she now wanting to behave properly? So how come the bad things are still happening? Hashem is saying she doesn't know where all the good comes for her. And therefore, I'm going to take things away from her. So what is the... what is being said over here? Is she returning to her husband or not? Wouldn't you expect if she was returning to her husband that then all the bad things would stop happening to her?
It's like a second resort.
Okay. Because she's not saying that there's no benefit to adultery and to promiscuity. What she's saying is, it was better for me then than now. That's all. But that's not acknowledging that there was nothing good in what she did, that all of what she has comes from her husband, comes from Hashem. She hasn't acknowledged that yet. And Hashem says, as long as the Jewish people have not yet acknowledged that, as long as they're still willing to believe that there is some good in going after other gods and other forms of worship, then I am going to take away all the good from her until she gets the message that it all comes from me. V'atoy now, Pasuk Yudbeis, verse 12, Agale es navlusa leinei me'aveha. Now even worse. I will reveal her
repulsiveness.
Okay, I was trying to put that into it. Right. In the eyes of those who loved her. I'm going to make her look terrible in the eyes of those who loved her. V'ish lo yatzilena miyadi, no man will save her from me. So Hashem says it's going to get so bad for her. Not only will she not be able to reach those who loved her, but this woman who was acting in a promiscuous way, not only will she be able she will not be able to get to those with whom she was acting improperly with, but now she will be shamed in front of them. They will see her as someone who they would not want to have anything to do with. V'nishbati kol misosa, I will remove or take away all of her joy. Chaga, chadsha, v'shabata, her chagim, her yamim tovim, chadsha, her rosh chodeshes, v'shabata, and her shabbases, v'chol mo'ada, all of her special occasions. I will take them away from her, so they won't have them. V'ashimosi, gafna u'seinasa, and I will destroy her vine and her fig tree. Asher Amra, that she said, she had said, Esna Hemali, they are a gift to me. Asher Nasnu li me'ahavai, that those who loved me gave me. Those with whom I acted promiscuously with, they gave those things to me. Hashem says, well, I'm going to take them away from her. V'samtim liyar, I'll give them to destruction. V'achalasam chayas ha'sadeh, and the beasts of the field will eat them. She won't get any of it. And I will visit upon her the days of the idolatry that she offered incense to them. And I will remove her jewelry and those things that beautify her. I'll take all that away. I think I translated something wrong. One second, please. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. But not I'll take away. And she beautified herself. Fatad nizma v'chal yasa. She beautified herself. And she wore jewelry. Fatelech achare me'avea. And she went after those who loved her. Vosi shachachan. And me, she forgot. Nu'um Hashem says Hashem. That's what she did. And therefore, I'm going to visit all that evil upon her. Okay, so till here, what we have is, again, this analogy of this woman who is acting promiscuously, and she believes that she gets a lot of good things from those with whom she's acting promiscuously with. So her husband reacts by cutting her off from them, and therefore she doesn't get anything. So she says, okay, I'll go back to my first husband because it was better for me then than now. But that's not good enough, because she's still acknowledging that there's
other things that are good out there. So again, I'm going to take things away from her. I'm going to make her look bad in the eyes of those who loved her. And I'm going to make sure that she doesn't have things and that she is punished. So for the Jewish people, same thing, that the Jews, because of our behavior, are going to be sent into Gullus, into exile. We will not have access to those non-Jews. It's counterintuitive. You think in exile you have more access to the non-Jews, but we won't, because the non-Jews are not going to want to have anything to do with us. And Hashem will shame the Jews in front of the non-Jews, so that the non-Jews won't want them, and they don't want to be with the non-Jews either, and non-Jewish worship. And they will have nothing and be punished and be in dire straits. Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16. So the result of all of this is, Lachain, therefore, Hine Anochi Mifateha. Therefore, I, says Hashem, or the husband, I will be Mifateher. I will entice her. V'olachtiha Hamidbar. I will take her to the wilderness. V'dibarti al liba, and I will speak on her heart. So this is already surprising. Until now, the husband was acting and in a way that was punitive. It was trying to get her to recognize her wrong ways. So you would expect that Tesvav 16 would say, Lachin, therefore, she will return and say, there's nothing good about those that I went with, and I recognize now everything comes from my husband. That's what you would have expected. But that's not what it says. What it says is that therefore now I will entice her, says Hashem. I will take her to the wilderness and speak on her heart. V'nasati la es kirameha misham, and I will give her her vineyards from there, from the wilderness. V'es emek of achor lefesach tikva, and the valley of gullus, of darkness, I will make a pesach, an entrance for tikva, for hope. Va'ansa shama kimeni ureha, and she will call out there like the days of her youth. Uchiyom alosam eretz mitzrayim, like the day that she went up from the land of Egypt. The midbar, the wilderness over here, is a reference to gullus. It's a reference to being in exile. And Hashem says, I will take her into Gullus. I'll take the Jews into Gullus. There in Gullus, the Jewish people will take to heart that they were not worshiping me properly. They were not obeying me. They were rejecting me. And the Jewish people will therefore turn to Hashem. The way that this is characterized is that the husband is going to entice the wife. Now, when we talk about the word entice, which is what the word mefateh means, you think of doing something nice for another person. You think of doing things that will make them want to follow you. It can be used in a negative context, it's used in a positive context, but that's the idea that you think of. You wouldn't think of doing something hurtful and call that enticing. But Hashem is here taking us into Gullus, and that is his way of enticing us. Because in Gullus itself, when we are there, that will force us to turn around and say, what have I been doing? And we turn to Hashem. But the mashal is of a husband enticing his wife, which means that even though Gullus is not a pleasant experience, and it is not something we would look at as something anybody would want, but what is the purpose of Gullus? It is not to hurt us, and it is not to just cause suffering and pain. The purpose of Gullus is for us to return to Hashem. Hashem looks at Gullus as a way of pitoy, of enticing the Jews back to him. Because when we were in Israel and living in Israel properly, we did not behave properly. We looked for other things. So Hashem is showing us there's nothing else to look for. There's nothing good out here. It's all terrible. What would you want out here anyway? And that's called being mefata, that's called enticing the Jewish people. And it is specifically in the Golus that Hashem says, I will give her her vineyard. That's where I will give her things. And it, the that valley of darkness will be an entrance to hope. And she will react like she did when she was young, when she left Mitzrayim. As we know in Mitzrayim, that we called out to Hashem. And here also, in the Golus, we will call out to Hashem. Yeah.
But the difference in different Golus, you know, we were in Babel. They already had established everything. Yeshivas and everything set up for the people who were later on were exiled. But here in our Golus today, somebody said we're losing Jews.
Okay, so let's go through this first, then we can talk specifically about our case. But let's finish up what we're saying over here. It's a good question. That's a good question. So it is specifically in the Golus itself that we will have the epiphany that we really belong with Hashem, and that is that it is in the Golus that we'll get the good things that will bring us back. Now, the word kerem, the word of the vineyard, there are different interpretations for what that means. Targum Yonason says it means Hashem will give us leadership and Talmidei Chachamim to lead us in the Golus itself. Another interpretation is that it's referring to that the Jewish people themselves, as we said before, that the Jewish people, which was the mother, was not behaving properly. Here, the Jews themselves will be referred to as a vineyard because they will return to Hashem. So we will be considered like a vineyard. Pasuk Yirches, verse 18. V'yayav ayom ahu, will be on that day, Nu'um Hashem, says Hashem. Tikri'i ishi, you will call me your ish, which is a word for husband. V'lo sikri'i li'od ba'ali, you will no longer call me ba'ali, which is another word for husband. Ish and ba'al are both words for husband. However, ish refers to a husband where the relationship is one of love and respect. Baal is connotes a relationship where the husband is ruling over the wife. So you will not call me Baali, the one who is forcing me to be here, which is what the woman was doing before when she was acting promiscuously, that she didn't want to be with her husband, so she referred to him as Baali. But now you will refer to me as Ishi, where you want to be here, I want to be here, where it's all a loving and respectful relationship. In addition, Chazal say that there will also be a comfort level, because Ish and Baal also has a connotation that Baali is a woman, that in the days of the Gemara, it was commonplace that they would do the Kiddushin, the first stage of marriage, they would do that, and then a year later, do the Nisuin, the second stage of marriage. Now, after the Kiddushin, which is when the husband puts the ring on the wife's finger, she is married to him, meaning that she is no longer permitted to any other man. But the two of them do not live in the same home yet, because they have not done chuppah, which is the second step in marriage. So they were, it was a year apart. Today we do it all together. We don't separate between the two. We just read the ksuba between the two stages of marriage. Both are done at the chuppah. But in their day, there was a year break between the two. So a woman who is in the first stage of marriage, there she would call her husband Baali. And then after the second stage of marriage, she would call her husband Ishi. So Ishi connotes a closer, more familiar relationship, a more comfortable relationship after they've had time to get to know each other better and they are comfortable with each other. So Hashem says, you will call me Ishi, you will not call me Baali, because our relationship will be stronger and you will feel comfortable with me. Not in this case. Okay. It can, but not in this case. Pasuk Yudtes, verse 19. I will remove, here it is what you were just referring to. I'll remove the names of the Baalim of the idolatry from her mouth. They will no longer be mentioned by their names. I will make a covenant with them on that day. Regarding the beasts of the field and the birds of the heavens, and that which crawls on the land, which means that I'll make a covenant that those things will no longer molest them. And the bow and the sword and war I will remove from the land, and I will have them rest in safety. And here we now have very famous psukim. They rastich li le'olam, and I will betroth you forever. They rastich li b'tzedek uv'mishpat uv'chesed uv'rachamim, and I will betroth you to me with righteousness and justice and kindness and mercy. They rastich li be'emunah, and I will betroth you to me in faithfulness. V'adat es Hashem, and you will know Hashem. So these are psukim that are often quoted within the context of marriage. There is a custom that when a man puts on his tefillin in the morning, that he recites these psukim, because the tefillin is symbolic of being bound to Hashem, similar to a marriage and being bound together. So therefore, it is a minhag to recite these psukim when a man puts on his tefillin. Chazal tell us that, so ve'erastich li le'olam, I will betroth you to me forever, that's self-evident. But the next four, ve'erastich li b'tzedek uv'mishpat uv'chesed uv'rachamim, I will betroth you to me with justice and with mercy, with, what is it, what did I say? With
righteousness
and justice and kindness and mercy. So tzedek and mishpat are not the same thing as chesed and rachamim. Tzedek and mishpat, righteousness and justice, that's not something which you betroth somebody with. Chesed and rachamim, kindness and mercy, that is. So Chazal explained, when we behave with tzedek and mishpat, then Hashem responds with chesed and rachamim. When we act the way we are supposed to, with tzedek and mishpat, with righteousness and justice, then Hashem responds with chesed and with rachamim, with kindness and mercy. In next week's parsha, this week is Lech Lecha, next week is Parshas Vayera. So in Parshas Vayera, Hashem says before the destruction of Sodom, you know that Hashem appears to Avraham and informs Avraham about what he's about to do to Sodom. The only reason why Avraham davened for Sodom is because Hashem told him that he was going to destroy Sodom. Had Hashem not told him, Avraham would not have known to daven for Sodom. But Hashem told him he's going to destroy Sodom. Why did Hashem tell Avraham that he's going to destroy Sodom? So Hashem says, how could I hide it from Avraham? Avraham, how can I not tell him what I am going to do? So why would Hashem feel that he can't hide from Avraham what he's going to do? So the pasuk says, Hashem says, how could I keep it from Avraham? But Avram, Avram is going to be a great nation. All the nations of the world will be blessed through him. And then it says, so the translation is, for I have loved him, because he commands his children and his household after him. Vishamru derech Hashem, and they keep the way of Hashem. Lasos tzedakah u'mishpat, to do righteousness and justice, charity and justice. L'man havi Hashem al Avram isa shediver alav, in order that Hashem might then bring upon Avram that which he had spoken of him. Now this is before Avram has any children. And yet Hashem says, I know Avraham. I know that he is going to, I shouldn't say he didn't have Yishmael, but he didn't have Yitzchak yet. He didn't have anybody from Sarah. I know Avraham, and I know that he is going to ensure that his children after him do tzedek and mishpat, charity and justice. Therefore, I can't hide anything from him, and therefore I'm going to bring upon him all that I said about him, which is chesed and rachamim. When we behave with tzedek and mishpat, with justice and mercy, with charity and justice, then Hashem behaves with us with chesed and rachamim. And then the next one, ve'irastichli be'emunah, betroth you in faithfulness. So that is in contrast to the unfaithfulness that had been discussed before. Now there will be faithfulness, v'yadat es Hashem, and you will know Hashem. That will be the result of the galus. Who will be on that day? The Haftarah for Bamidbar ends here, but the parak continues. We'll keep on reading here. Who will be on that day? I will call out, says Hashem. I will call out to the heavens. And they, the heavens, will in turn call out to the earth, which means the heavens will rain. I'll call out to the heavens, and then the heaven will rain upon the earth. And the land will call out to the grain, the wine, and the oil. They will grow. As Yisrael, and they will call out to Yisrael, which is the Jewish people who had been scattered. Now, all of this will come up and help the Jewish people. Uzrati ali ba'aretz, and I will plant her for me in the land, which means the Jews will be in Eretz Yisrael. V'richamti eslo ruchama, I'll have mercy on the one who previously was no mercy. V'amarati lelo ami, and I will say to the one who had previously been not my nation, amiato, you are my nation. V'hu yomar elokai, and he will say, my God, my Hashem. That'll be the result of the galus. So the complete mashal that had taken place over here is now finished. In the next parak, we'll have another mashal that's going to take place with Hosea. But here we have the end of this mashal. So again, Hosea had said, the Jews weren't behaving properly, and Hashem told Hosea this, and Hosea said, fine, so get rid of them. So Hashem makes Hosea take a woman who is unfaithful and has children from her. He cannot forsake them, Hashem says, so I can't forsake the Jewish people either. So that causes Hosea to daven for us Jews. And now the mashal follows through into the whole concept of this woman going away from her husband and thinking things are better elsewhere, and her husband taking steps to show her that she's wrong. She partially understands that, but does not fully repudiate the way she was behaving. So it continues. It's still bad. And finally, she realizes that everything comes from her husband, and Hashem says, then in the galus itself, in the midbar itself, is where there will be an opening of hope, and she will return to me, and I will return to her. And that's called enticing her, says the Navi. That's what it means when Hashem takes us into galus. Now, Mrs. Starkman asked about our galus today. So it's important to at least try to draw some conclusions over here. That would be important to do. However, it's not easy necessarily to do it. The reason it's not so easy to do is because our galus today is so different than the experience of galus for the Jewish people before. And we are in a completely different paradigm than what the Jews have experienced in Galus. Galus is not a pleasant experience. And that has been the way that we Jews have experienced Galus until now, till our day and age, till recent history. It has been a difficult, painful experience with a lot of suffering. And even when things were relatively calm, first of all, the calm didn't last too long in any given place. And second of all, we Jews were never really fully accepted in the nations, in the cultures in which we lived. the truth is today we're still not really fully accepted, but people feel that we are. We can be lulled into a sense of being accepted. We're not really accepted, but that is the there is a sense that that is true. We're certainly more accepted than we've been in the past. I read a tshuva responsa from Rav Moshe Feinstein from the 1970s, I believe, maybe the 60s, in which it has to do with a man who's involved in in building a building. He's with other Jews together. They're building a building, and where they all intend to live in this building. It's seven different people, seven different families that are planning on living in this building. And the one who's writing to Rav Moshe is writing how he's stuck in this business deal and he can't get out of it. And the reason he can't get out of it is he can't sell it, his share. He can't sell it to non-Jews because no non-Jews would want to live in a building with Jews. That was not in Europe in 1850. Talking about in the United States in the, I don't remember, it was the 50s, 60s, 70s, somewhere in there, in the middle 20th century. But that was the response he was writing about. So I'm just showing you that it's not so simple. But we certainly have a sense of being more accepted, and we probably are more accepted today than we've been in the past. So it's more a little difficult to follow this particular mashal in where we are now. Not only are we more accepted, but also we, by and large, there's always rough spots and there's bumps in the road, but by and large, we lead relatively pleasant lives. I don't mean to say that everything is wonderful in our lives, but I mean to say that the real grinding poverty that took place in previous generations, the open anti-Semitism and the restrictions that were placed upon our lives in previous generations, it's not just that we were openly despised, and it's not just that we were often very, very poor, but more than that, we were very restricted. We couldn't go anywhere we wanted to go. We couldn't have everything we wanted to have. We couldn't do everything we wanted to do. And in our culture, in our day and age, these things have been lifted very, very much. We can travel, we can buy things, we can have things. We're not in grinding poverty, even though everybody would like to have more money than they have. But it's still a far cry from the grinding poverty that was experienced in Europe, where people literally did not have what to eat. It's just not that, and we don't have the open anti-Semitism in the ways that there were, even though there is some, but it's not nearly what it was then. We even have rights, and we can go to the authorities and they'll respond, which is something which is a new thing for a Jew, that a Jew can get response from the local authorities and get help from a police force that is at least, you know, is meant to be helpful to the populace, including the Jews. That's a blip in history. That's not a common thing. So this description of Gullus in Hosea certainly sounds much more like the typical Gullus that we've experienced, not the one that we're in right now. And the truth is that the one we're in right now is one in which, as you pointed out, we're losing a lot of Jews, not to, God forbid, death and suffering and destruction, but rather to assimilation. So where we are right now is essentially similar to what the Jews were in Israel prior to Gullus, where things are relatively good, and then we end up with this analogy of the promiscuous wife who is saying, well, maybe there's stuff that's better off over there. What do I have to be here for? And we really are, it's a throwback to that, even though we are in Gullus. Now, we're still in Gullus. It's not as good as being in Geula, as being in redemption. But there's no question that there is this that we are definitely, you can compare our Gullus in some ways to the era of the time before we went into Gullus when we behaved improperly. So that would mean that the it, it, it's it can be that we are in the stage right now of, as Hashem says, I am at will entice her. As what one has to recognize in the gullus that we're in is that the very fact that it is a blip in history says that this is abnormal and it shouldn't be happening. And if it is happening, we have to very clearly recognize that it is completely from Hashem, that this is not natural, that we should be enjoying this level of acceptance and enjoying this level of freedom that we have. And therefore, we have to presume that it is all from Hashem. So in this galus, we have to look at it as we want it to be the end of all the galuses. This is what it's supposed to be. We want it to be the Mashiach should come very quickly. And the way that would happen is to understand that this is Hashem enticing us back to Him. But if, God forbid, we credit the good and the freedom that we have to the culture around us and to the non-Jews, to the non-Jewish way of life, then we're only slipping back into, God forbid, that behavior which led to the galus in the first place. So it is critical, this analogy, that we look at it properly, that this is all coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.